And coming up on CoastsideBuzz.com, we have the Coastside Musicians segment. This is where your host, that would be me, Harry the Y, interviews local musicians and other people involved with the music scene here in Half Moon Bay and the adjacent areas. Today, we are fortunate to have with us Brian Overfelt, who I understand is a local, and we're going to get into several different areas of his life before we're through. So, Brian, as they used to say, this is your life. Welcome.
Hey, thanks, Harry. Good to be here.
All right. What I'd like to do is why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself?
All right. I moved to the coast in 1974 at the ripe age of three and moved to El Granada and went to Farallon View. My family took off around the country, and I came back when I was 11, where I attended Cunha at Half Moon Bay High School, and I've lived here ever since.
Well, it's kind of interesting, by the way. When I was first a member of the yacht club, I was a treasurer. Your father was our accountant.
Oh, nice. Yeah, he did. He did that for a lot of coastside businesses and private as well.
Now, I got to ask you: are you yourself a musician by any chance?
I was a singer in a metal band for about 13 years called The Dust.
Oh, cool. It's amazing how we just have to ask that question. Now, there's a few areas in your life, and I've known you for a bit now, and I know you're actively involved with a lot of stuff, but lately you've had something really neat happen to you, and I see it over Facebook with you and a little human being in the picture. Why don't you tell us about this new found joy in your life?
Steele Wiley Overfelt, born April 15th last year. She's 14 and a half months old. She's our first child. My wife, Chelsea, and I is our first baby, and she's absolutely wonderful. And she's currently enjoying the beaches of Southern California with her mom's family, and she's just turning into quite a little butterfly. She's awesome.
Yeah, when I was in my late teens, I used to surf in Southern California when I lived down there, and places like Huntington, the cliffs at Huntington was about my favorite place to go down there and surf. And no, you'd never catch me out at anything like Mavericks. Now,
I don't blame you.
Second question for you, leading right into where I want to go. Now, I understand you surf,
mm-hmm.
And I also understand you're very much involved with the Mavericks competition that we have here. And why don't you tell us a bit about what you do with Mavericks and how things are going there?
Okay, yeah. Basically, years ago, in 2010, after the 2010 event, which was the biggest surf contest in the history of paddle surfing to this day, the organizers were sort of reorganizing, and it was sort of what you could call up for grabs. And so a bunch of local coastsiders got together and started to sort of figure out what did we want for this event. And it was literally an open door for almost anyone that wanted to come in and help. And through knowing some of the local competitors and growing up around here with Jeff Clark and Ion Banner, Matt Ambrose, Sean Rhodes, some of the Pacifican guys. Dick Keating was always a guy we all looked up to. Just had always had great conversations with everybody. So I kind of walked through the door, and I haven't left yet. We've been through a number of organizations. We've reorganized a few times. We've recently brought in an organization, a company called Cartel. And they're located down in Hollywood, but most of them live in Santa Cruz, so they're more of a Santa Cruz firm. And through them controlling our IP, right? They're doing sort of our branding and getting the sponsors and the TV shows and all that kind of thing. We've got a really nice group of, you know, worldly business people trying to keep it sustainable. Then we bring in local contingent, whether it be Ion Banner, Dale Verosco, Jeff Clark, Matt Ambrose, Sean Rhodes. We've brought in Pacifica to be part of it, a little bit of Santa Cruz, and we're trying to keep this thing well-rounded and keep it sustainable. And I think one of the greatest interests is why we want to do this is a couple of reasons. Number one, for the athlete, you know, it's a neat opportunity for guys that have the courage and the athletic talent, men and women, by the way, that want to go out there and express themselves on those waves. It's a great avenue for them to get some attention, maybe pick up a sponsor and just do what they love. And the other thing, which is as important, is the community. We all know that when the event happens, this town just, it's like a carousel holiday, if you will, right? You never know when it's going to be, but when it happens, everybody loves it. People come out for it. The hotels fill up, the restaurants fill up, the bars fill up, and the town, the county, the entire county from Pacifica all the way down to Pescadero, everyone does really well economy-wise, and it helps everybody out in a lot of ways. So, and then you have the kids on the coast that look up to the surfers and that grew up surfing like me, and we look up to those guys that are and women that have the courage to drop in on those big waves. So, it's just something that's it's almost like it's a natural phenomenon that we have here in Half Moon Bay, right off Pillar Point there, that it's such a lucky thing that we have. So my goal as one of the board members and contest organizers is just to try and keep it as organic as possible and to let it help out our community in all those ways I just mentioned. And I think it's very important. And I think I'm still involved because I don't want to let it go and get into the wrong hands. And it's a constant battle because there's a lot of people that have different ideas, and you're just trying to keep it, you know, so it's advantageous for the community and the athlete, you know?
Well, I've been out at the break before when Mavericks has been cooking and people are out there surfing, which is really phenomenal because you can be in an area of flat ocean and just a few yards away, you've got these big waves breaking. It's a really incredible sight and sound. But one of the things that I discovered this year for the first time, and maybe it's the first time it happened, but having been out there, I think that one of the best ways to watch it was the Red Bull TV coverage. For people who have streaming TV, I was getting it 1080 quality on the picture, great sound. They had cameras all over the place, to include in a helicopter. And I'll tell you what, I really enjoyed that. And I think it's the first time that Red Bull TV did this, if I'm correct. No.
Red Bull came in a few years ago and they did a great thing for us. We actually didn't anticipate such coverage across the worldly internet. And so many people tuned in that everything basically crashed and shut down. And Red Bull TV came in and picked it up and kept it alive. And this was, I think, two contests ago. Yeah. And then this year we had we were more specifically, you know, using Red Bull, and they did a wonderful job. And we've always had a great relationship with Red Bull. And a matter of fact, a couple of weeks ago, I sat down with one of the, you know, they're from, the main guys are from Austria.
Yeah.
I sat down with the vice president of GoPro and one of the top executives of Red Bull. And we had lunch at the OPL. And I knew he was for real because he had an Austrian accent. And he looked at me and he said, I've never been to the West Coast of the United States. And I anticipated a big city. He said, what a treat to be brought to this place, looking at the harbor, having fresh fish, sitting here. And we had a really, really nice lunch. And yeah. I've always had a good relationship with Red Bull. And here I met one of their top guys and thought he was a great guy.
Like I say, it's the one thing I will say is the bigger your TV, the better. But the pictures that they get, it just phenomenally, and you really get to see when you look at the size of the wave and the little surfer, you know, on this huge wave, it is mind-boggling.
Yeah, I wanted to give a little credit to our partners, which would be Griffin Guess, and we basically have come together as Titans and Mavericks. And they really wanted that picture to be special this past year. So this past year, by far, the picture was the best. There was more cameras and higher quality cameras and better angles and more angles. There's a lot of thought put into that. So they spent a lot of time, money, and effort to make that quality as good as what you saw. It's good to hear that people have noticed the difference. This year, it was definitely a special year for that, for sure.
Well, I know one local entertainment place place to get food and beverages is adding the Roku boxes so that they can stream Red Bull. And for anybody who's not familiar with it, if you've got streaming TV through the internet, check out Red Bull TV because it's not just surfing. They have a lot of stuff that they cover in the sporting worlds, and their coverage is great. I got to admit, it's wonderful. And like I say, this is the first time I really was able to enjoy Mavericks because when I was out there, I was worried about running into other boats where you could sit down, not worry about anything, and just watch the competition. It's fantastic.
You got to have sea legs when you're out there, too. If you don't have sea legs when you're out there, it can be like a bad flu.
Well, that's true. Fortunately, I didn't have a bad flu, but I was just it was just so awesome when you see something like that. One thing, Brian, I know you surf. Mm-hmm. Have you ever surfed the break at Mavericks?
It's a really good question, and I will answer that question respectfully and delicately. I have surfed Mavericks, but I wouldn't say that I surf Mavericks. And the reason I say that is because I've cat and moused it a little bit, gone out there and gotten a couple waves. I haven't gotten anything real big or anything, but I never want to make someone believe I do something I don't do, because the guys and the women and the men that go out there and surf that place and light their hair on fire and they love it. I would never want to say, hey, I surf Mavericks, because they surf Mavericks. You know, there's a few of us local guys that go out there and play a little cat and mouse. Then you have a few local guys, you know, like Ion, that go out there and they're some of the very best. Colin Dwyer and Travis Payne and Ion Banner and, you know, Jeff back in the day. And, you know, watching those people, you know, attack Mavericks the way they do, it's mind blowing. And that's another reason I'm involved, is I have so much respect for all the athletes that go out there and enjoy the wave that much. They really enjoy it, you know. And the whole time I'm out there, if I'm on a surfboard, I'm straight scared the whole time. Where they're everyone has fear, but you know, everyone deals with it a little bit differently. But so I've surfed Mavericks, but on a very limited basis, very select, and very cat and mouse, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, well, having been close to the break, it's like a freight train rolling at you, and the thought of being on one of those waves. Let's put it this way. When I surfed, if I couldn't see over, if the wave was taller than I was, it was way too big for me.
Me too.
And that was back in the day. I had a 9'6" Hobie that weighed more than I did. Moving on. Your next favorite topic, and we still haven't got to music yet. Can you believe that, Brian?
Yeah, I'm enjoying myself.
Oh, good. In that case, let's talk about beach replenishment.
Ooh, it's one of my favorites.
Okay.
Okay, geez, where should I start? I'll start, I guess, where it all started. 1986, Half Moon Bay High School, I was listening to some of the upperclassmen discuss the breakwater and how good the wave used to be. And I always thought the breakwater was really good, you know, in the 80s. And as a kid learning how to surf, powerful sort of refracts off the breakwater and creates a really good wave. And it's a difficult wave, you know, it's a protected break. So you see a lot of people learning there. But when that wave gets good, it's a very difficult wave to surf. And I heard these upperclassmen discussing, you know, that we're losing sand and we need to take the sand that's collecting inside the harbor and nourish those beaches. There's four creeks that come off Montara Mountain that empty their sediment sand into the harbor. And there's also a fifth source of sand. It's your natural North American, you know, sand flow. The rivers flow out of the mountains, they flow to the ocean. The littoral cell running north to south picks up that sand and disperses it along the beaches along North America, all the way down to the tip of Chile. And they've had a lot of problems too. So when you dam rivers or you build a breakwater, that sand needs to be replaced where it should have gone. The sand, say, from Surfers Beach, you know, all the way down towards Miramar, it's just scouring. We're losing the cliffs. We almost lost the highway. That's why there was that emergency repair. In my opinion, the worst thing you can do is put rocks up, and that's all they're doing. And it's sad to see them making these big mistakes. And the frustrating thing for me is they know this is a big mistake. The entire state of California, the eastern, the shoreline along the East Coast, all of Australia, all of Hawaii, they are replenishing sand. They're taking sand out of where it's collecting and they're putting it where it needs to go. They do it. We're caught in the Monterey Bay National Marine Sanctuary. And for some reason, the sanctuary built their boundary around Pillar Point Harbor and didn't include it in the sanctuary. So Santa Cruz, Moss Landing, and Monterey, they all dredge and replace and use sand replenishment and nourishment. We should be doing the same thing. Some of the reasons are the same and some of the reasons are different. You know, you've got the Elkhorn Slough coming out of Moss Landing, and Santa Cruz's problem is that the sand builds up so quickly it actually blocks entry into the harbor. And then Monterey has their own reasons. And we have many reasons. We've never dredged our harbor and replenished our beaches. Never once. They've dredged our harbor and put the sand back inside the harbor. Like recently they dredged a boat launch and put the sand next to the kayak company. Don't really know why they did that, because there's places inside our harbor that could use replenishment as well. Down by the yacht club, as you come up, there's some erosion going on down there. They should have been replenishing down there. It's a very strange thing. People have been talking about this. I hate to say this, but I have literature from 1970 that our community begged the Harbor District to help with the eroding beaches of Surfers Beach. And to find this literature and then to be shut down by the Department of Transportation, who else was involved? But we basically have been reaching out for help since 1970, and I have the literature to prove it, and they've never done anything. And it's sad to watch our beaches go. I had a really interesting conversation with some friends from Martin's Beach, and they said, hey, Brian, you think that the Bay of Half Moon Bay has been affected? They said Martin's Beach has lost its sand as well. That sand flow that should be coming down out of those four creeks and the north-south sand flow that comes down has also been taken away from Martin's Beach. Martin's Beach has been affected by this. So our entire Bay of Half Moon Bay, Martin's Beach, and this part of California is being greatly affected by the Pillar Point breakwater.
Now, the one thing I see for the surfers at Surfers Beach, when you have a low tide, there's a lot of rocks that start sticking up there, and I know they surf on top of them, and that looks like that could create some problems, and we've been very lucky that nobody's slammed into one of those rocks.
No, people have.
Oh, they have?
We've been hurt. I've broke my fins out on those rocks. I've got cut by those rocks. when they were rebuilding those rocks lately, you surf till dark, you get out of the water, and you got to climb up those things in the dark. You know, it's just really, it's a really strange thing going on down there, that why they're not taking the technology, the ocean, environmental ocean hydrology, and the knowledge that we have, and taking care of our beaches. It's sad. We should have beautiful white sand beaches going all the way down to Half Moon Bay State Beach and beyond. And it's just, we're currently, just so everybody knows, we have a grant from NOAA asking the Boating and Waterways for $850,000, a proposal to take 75,000 cubic yards off the outer breakwater and nourish Surfers Beach. We're not going to dredge it the first time. They're going to excavate it because the permitting and everything. The good news in all this is that when we're discussing this in a room with all the political officials and the Harbor District and everything, the sanctuaries were in the room, because we're so lucky to fall in two sanctuaries. We're in Gulf of the Farallones as well as Monterey Bay National Marine Sanctuary. They crisscross, and we're right in the middle. Well, the sanctuaries were present, and I said, well, this is a great idea, this grant. I hope we get it. But the white elephant in the room is, and I addressed the sanctuary, the very nice representative from Monterey Bay National Marine Sanctuary. I said, ma'am, are you going to stop us? Because they're congressional. They have the jurisdiction to stop us from doing that. And she said, no, we're not going to stop you. She said, we do now realize how important this is. So there's been sort of the ban on dredging has been speculatively lifted, if that makes any sense. And we're waiting to see if we get this proposal to get the money to take some sand out of the harbor and put 75,000 cubic yards right there by the highway where it belongs.
Well, I know myself, I've been to meetings going on probably close to 10 years now with people involved and the agencies involved, and I do hope this time we really see some action from that, because it's well overdue. And you know it can be done, and you know it works, and I think the best local evidence of that I've seen is at Ocean Beach up in San Francisco, where they're taking the sand from the south part of the beach, taking it to the north part of the beach, because the ocean has been doing the exact opposite. And the only way to keep that in check is to go ahead and move that sand. So the concept of sand replenishment is one that was proven here and has been proven, like you say, in Santa Cruz and various other marinas up and down the state, where they've been able to dredge and get that stuff out of there. We'll keep our fingers crossed, and I know that you know that if you have a meeting coming up and you need some support, I'm more than happy to be there and put the word out for other people. I know there's a lot of support for doing something, and that sand replenishment that you're talking about, and I know you've done a lot of research, is probably the only long-term solution that's going to work.
I just wanted to add to that, you know, when it comes to deciding on what side of the fence to be on in life and what decisions to go for, you always look for the win-win-win-win-win sort of scenarios. And in my opinion, you know, if we can nourish those beaches, we bring our beaches back, which is good for the economy. You protect the highway. You give the snowy plover the sand they need down by Venice. You protect the homes. You protect Murata Road. You know, and then the one thing no one ever mentions is our harbor is filling up. And our harbor has some issues. There could be some pollution that's filling up and getting too shallow. Some of the boats are getting stuck at the not only the where they unload, also at the where they fuel up, the fuel dock. So it's like we need to clean and clear our harbor And if it's polluted, then we need to dispose of that properly. Use what we can use, discard what needs to be discarded, use what we have to nourish, and move on. Our coastside is a gem. The harbor and the beach is right there. It's a beautiful gem, and we need to treat it as such.
Well, and to add to the harbor issue, it has taken away a lot of navigable waters within the breakwater already. And we are the only harbor between Santa Cruz and San Francisco, and we are a harbor of refuge. And, if that inlet at what we call the Jaws ever starts silting up too much, the Coast Guard's not going to be able to get in here like they have been able to in the past. All right, well, let's thank good thoughts for getting this thing going, and hopefully we'll see some sand start moving from the harbor to the beaches.
When the day that happens, I will be there, and I'll be celebrating.
Well, we'll open up a good bottle of champagne for that one.
I would love that.
All right, now what you're here for. Can you imagine that? We haven't even got to that. You, sir, are the proprietor of the Old Princeton Landing, locally known as the OPL. And you're a site for musicians, both local and otherwise. And what I'd like you to do now is let's tell our listeners a little bit about the operation of the OPL, how you got involved, where you're taking it, and your vision for where it's going.
Picking up for where we left off earlier when you said, are you a musician yourself? I used to, the metal band I was in, we would play there. And when we would play there, we'd bring a couple other bands with us and we'd promote it. And they would let us have our shows there. And we did a really good job bringing the local community. A couple hundred people would show up. We'd have a great night, you know. And I would always look in there and go, you know, this place is pretty gnarly, but when the right people show up, it's wonderful in here. And so I always knew that the Old Princeton Landing, it was a great place and is a great place. And so when the opportunity arose, we were friends with the owners. My dad was really close with the family, and they thought, and I did a lot of promoting. Sometimes I actually promoted shows my band wasn't part of. I would just promote shows there and bring a lot of people out for live music. And through that success, I was given the opportunity to take the place over and take over the lease. And that's exactly what I did. Never wanted anything to do with food. And now I know why, because my mother and I took over the grill next door. And I wasn't happy with how it was being done previously, and realized that I don't think I'd ever be happy to give everyone credit, because I think we want a pulse with ourselves. I knew what would match what I'm doing in the bar, and now I'm doing a lot of craft beer now, so I want the food to pair with the beer, and I want nicer wine to go with the food, and I want to bring in local fish off the local fishing boats, and I go down and get beef off the Marky Guard Ranch, and the Yakapis have been so generous and helped me out with their vegetables, and the Mr. Morgan and the Fitzes on the Morgan, the Betancourts and the Mariah Lee, and you know, I just thought it was such a neat thing to bring in local food. You know, my brother and I would surf around the world growing up, and we would go to Mexico and Costa Rica and Indonesia and Panama, and guess what you're eating? You're eating such good food, because when you're a fishing village in Mexico, you're eating the tortillas they made, the eggs from the chickens right there. You know, the fish they just caught, and that's why the food's so good. So that's what we've decided to do with the grill. I've recently combined the entire place into one place. It's the Old Princeton Landing Public House and Grill, and it's one business now. So it's not two. It's not separated. And it's the food part of it's been a lot of fun. It's very difficult. I have 25 new employees. I don't know them all, you know, so you get all kinds of funny things going on. I will be writing a book, because I think that I've got a New York Times bestseller if I can just get some time to write down on paper, because the things that happen in there are just amazing. As all everyone that's worked or ran or been in or been part of the back of the restaurant business knows, it can be a total circus. But getting back to the music, what I want to do is have great music with great food, and have and, you know, provide a service to the locals and the visitors around here to get something unique and local.
Well, I think that one of the things that's interesting is you feature both non-local and local talent. If I could only learn how to speak English, how do you go about deciding which bands you want to play at the OPL?
You know, it's a very subjective business. My music partner, Mike Lamoran, a local kid, runs my sound and helps me book the music. We do this together. So we use each other. We have a 50-50 rule. It's like we don't book anything until we both approve it. And it really helps. He really helps me with that. And, you know, some bands we want to play there, but they want too much money. Some bands we want to play there, but they're too famous. So what we try and do is we try and go after the shows, the musicians that we know could fill the place So for one, we're looking for quality. For two, we're looking for bands that have a draw, so we can help the bands help pay the musicians. And every show is different. So we try to set guidelines, like how to, you know, here's our guidelines, how to book a band. Every band and every show is completely different. And you have to treat it as such. And we do have our guidelines to a degree. But, you know, if you're bringing in an Emmy Award winning band like the White Buffalo, they do all the music for Sons of Anarchy that have played there recently. I deal with them a lot differently than I deal with, you know, some of my friends that are in local bands. But our favorite are the locals that spend the time and practice and get good. I love throwing a bone to the locals to play there. That's number one. And then number two, I want to go after the best bands I can. Everyone knows Neil Young did a number of shows back in 1996 there. And I was very lucky to see a couple of those shows. That's the ultimate goal, to get a musician such as Neil Young to come in and play. So that's the dream. And then we get lucky. I've had bands like the Expendables. When Sublime branched off and one part of the band went in the Long Beach Dub All Stars, we've had them in there and they've become friends. I bring those guys up from Long Beach. Michael Happel from Long Beach comes up with the boys. And then, you know, like I said, we bring in the local people and then we combine them. So I'll take a local band open for a big band. And when that happens, everything comes together, but it's very difficult. It's always a negotiation. Unfortunately, the business gets really hard. So then sometimes you can't work it out. Sometimes, you know, you have a band that you really want to play there. Like I had Willie Nelson coming up the coast. They were very willing to come and play. I just couldn't afford it. The place is too, the Old Prince Atlantic's occupancy is about 160 in the main room. So I can only sell so many tickets. So, you know, the Red Hot Chili Peppers, if they want $250,000, I'm just not going to recoup that at the door.
The minute you do, would you please let me know how you did it? Because I want in on that business.
You know, they played for my friends in Big Sur, and a friend of mine from Half Moon Bay that many of us grew up with, she runs that really pretty restaurant down there in Nepenthe, and there was a Red Hot Chili Pepper show in Big Sur, and I called her up and I said, you know what, if I were to ever get lucky enough to get Neil Young back or someone like that, and you want me to call you, you better call me the next time you get the Chili Peppers. So we pinky sweared that one. So I've got a deal going in Big Sur. So,
well, we look forward to that. And I do know several musicians who play at your place, and they enjoy playing there. One is fairly new, and they're getting their foot in the door. Another group has been around for some time, and they just play good music. And you provide them an opportunity to play. And like I say, they don't mind opening for a big-name act. Because they get out there, they get to play, they have fun. You know, and that's what musicians mostly are about because, as you probably know, being in the restaurant bar business, it's not a great way to make a lot of money unless your name is Mick Jagger or something like that. And to have the kind of environment that you have there, and it is a great little venue. And also got to remember that during sporting events, you've got a couple of good-sized TV sets. And even during Mavericks, we can watch the competition there, right?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, we really like the surf competitions. You know, I set up my systems to stream all internet live for one reason only. I always wanted to watch the Pipeline Masters out of Oahu, Hawaii. And it took me 3 years to figure it out to stream on all the TVs, to do it properly. And it was like 2 days after the Pipe Masters a couple of years ago, we finally got it, and I was so bummed. But ever since then, we have, you know, wherever the world tour stops, we do stream every event live at the Old Princeton Landing, and we love it, you know. Another little thing I've been doing brand new, I've been working with a couple of locals, Chris Loswick in particular, local realtor. We've been doing surf movie nights, and we're going to do the last Thursday of July, August, and September. And we're going to feature different surf movies. We did one a few months back with John Florence's movie, View of a Blue Moon. And it went over really, really well. And the neatest thing about that show was they showed John when he was like 8 years old. And he's phenomenal. He's one of the best surfers in the world now. And they have footage of him as a little boy paddling out to a wave. And my friend's son was sitting there and he had asked his mom and dad, can little boys surf too? And the very first scene in the movie is a little 8-year-old boy paddling out into some big surf because John's he's a phenom. And so these little boys saw that and they wouldn't stop talking about it, inspired them to surf locally. And I guess if I could get anything out of having a surf movie night, it doesn't get any better than that.
Well, the other thing, when you have the surf movie nights, I know that Michelle Dragony at CoastsideBuzz.com has a calendar, and she has all the music stuff. I don't know if she knows about the surf night, but make sure that she knows about it so it gets on the calendar, and people can go to the calendar on BuzzTime.com and find out when you have surf nights at the OPL.
This is the first time I've ever mentioned it, Harry, so I'll have to give her a call.
This may be the first time she hears of it.
We just organized it, Chris and I did, a few days ago, so we're looking forward to this little series of surf movies.
Well, it's a great idea, and you know, here you've got music to go along with surfing. You've got food added in. How does life get better at the OPL?
I'm gonna plead the fifth.
All right, we're going to let you get away with that one today. Tomorrow might be another story. But for people, local people, I strongly encourage you to patronize our local establishments like the OPL. They are there. They help local musicians. The food is good. I've also eaten there. And it's a great place. You'll run into people you know if you're on the coast side. And if not, you'll make some new friends. Brian, is there anything else you'd like to add?
Oh, no, man. I like having these discussions, Harry, whether it be beach replenishment. Always happy to talk about the Mavericks event. You know, it's all about the community. And just, you know, I just appreciate, after owning my own business and working for myself, I appreciate all the hard work from those people that own restaurants and bars and run their own businesses here around town and everywhere else. Because it's running your own business is a very difficult thing. And I sure have gained a ton of respect for those that own successful restaurants. Because my goodness,
I know a number of people in the business like yourself, and a lot of people don't realize it's a 7-day-a-week job, 24 hours a day, and it's a thankless job because most people have no idea what's involved because of all the logistics of just keeping a restaurant and a bar going. It gets very complex very quickly, and so I have some idea of the kind of work that you put in to make the place work. Brian, I want to thank you for coming in today. As far as listeners, please go check out the music at the OPL. You'll find out on the calendar at CoastsideBuzz.com who's playing and when, not just the OPL, but all other venues on the coast. And go in, enjoy the place, have a bite to eat. And during surfing competitions, there is no better place to go to watch Mavericks in person on TV. And this is another episode of Coastside Musicians. I want to thank you all for having listened, and we'll be back with more of Coastside Musicians with musicians and the people who get a place available for musicians to ply their trade here on CoastsideBuzz.com.